Good morning. You surprised me. I thought there was another verse of that one. Good to be with you this morning. Couple things to mention before we get started. First of all, as I've mentioned a few times, and hopefully not too many more times up here, we have started having an attended nursery, during worship time. A couple things to mention about that. Because we have the Children's Bible Hour that starts during this song, I think a lot of folks have assumed that's when that starts too. It's back there the whole time. So if at any point during our worship time, whether it's during the early song service or during the sermon, you feel the need for that, it is back there for you. Secondly, if you would like to help with that, we would love to have you volunteer. All those who are concerned about where my wife was last week, and I didn't know where she was, that's where she was. I was right. Several people went to her before I got to her and said, "Your husband's looking for you." But she is back there helping out with the kids again today. But if you'd like to volunteer, you could talk to her, and she will get you worked into the schedule for that. Secondly, if you would like to help out with our VBS coming up in June, be sure to see Karina about that, and she will find a place to plug you in. And I mention both of those because something new since the last VBS, and also as we're starting this this nursery, is we have been doing background checks for those working with kids here at our church. And if you're visiting with us, I hope that's something that maybe is a comfort to you to know that your kids are secure and with people who've been checked out. We trusted them already, and you just don't know who they are yet. And so I understand that you need a little more assurance than maybe we do. And also, if you're a member here and wondered why, we did trust you before, I promise. But we just want to be assured that our kids are safe, and want to assure folks who come and visit with us that their kids are safe. And so if you want to help out with either of those things, that's one of those little red tape things you have to go through. You can go to our church website and to the family section, and there is a link there that you can click and do your background check. If you want to be ahead of the game, or if you want to wait until you volunteer and we remind you, we can do that too. But it is something that's just there for the security of our kids. This morning, if you would like to turn to Luke chapter 15, and I will tell you on the front end, there are no slides today because we're going to go through the whole chapter, and I didn't want to do a whole chapter worth of slides. So that's why there's no slides today. I figure we can follow along. If you don't have a Bible with you, there's likely one in a seat in front of you somewhere. Or if not, you want to cheat and use your phone, that's okay too. Just don't play Angry Birds. Use your Bible on your phone. We're going to be looking this morning at Luke chapter 15, and we're going to be looking at four things that are lost in the course of Luke chapter 15. August of 2014, our family was getting ready to move here to Eugene, Oregon. And we found that in the 9 years, I believe, we had been in the house we were in, we had collected a lot of junk. Now, because we tend to be collectors of junk, there were actually still boxes on the shelves in our garage from the 2005 move into that house that we had never touched, some of which we quickly looked through, got rid of, some of which actually made the trip to Eugene. But we downsized a lot, got rid of a lot of stuff. And as we were going through packing things up, we hit the point where the really important things needed to go, like TVs and things like that, that you didn't want to take down right away. I had in our house in Searcy the man cave. And I really miss sometimes my man cave. Now, I will tell you, the only reason I was fortunate enough to have a man cave is because before getting into what I'm doing now, I was a youth minister. And we had kids over to the house quite a bit where we would play games or watch movies or things like that. And so because of that, I could use as an excuse, I really need a larger TV for all these kids. I really need the latest video game system for when they come over and we can sit and hang out and do stuff. And so I had on the wall of the man cave a 50-inch plasma screen TV. And I remember vividly walking through Sam's Club one day. And for the uninitiated to the South, Sam's Club is the South and Midwest version of Costco, only usually not as crowded. You can find parking spots there. And I'm walking through the Sam's Club, as I frequently did, through the electronics section. And I would walk through trying to catch the drool from my chin and see all the latest gadgets that I wanted to have. And my wife would walk along beside me patiently. And one day I was standing in front of this 50-inch plasma screen, as I had done probably 15 times before. And my wife says to me, "Why don't you just get it? You're going to get it at some point. Why don't you just today, why don't you just get it?" And first of all, I said, "Who are you and what have you done with my wife?" And then secondly, I said, are you serious? Are you really? Yeah, go ahead and get it. It'll be great for the teens when they come over. We haven't really spent a lot of money this year. This would be something that, you know, special that we can do. I said, "All right, let's go." And so we got this 50-inch plasma screen TV, and it was in the time where those things were not lightweight like they are today, weighed 124 pounds. I know because I looked at the box when I started to lift it and said, "This weighs a lot." And it was 124 pounds. It had to go upstairs into the man cave because we don't have basements in Arkansas because of all the rock that things are built on because we're wise men. Anyhow, took the thing upstairs, decided we wanted to mount it on the wall because that's what you do with those things. And so we mounted it on the wall. And we had two little kids that we were concerned about because of the weight of that thing on the wall. And I made sure it was in studs and everything was right the way it was supposed to be. And then the last step was you could do this a few ways, but what they encouraged you to was put a small padlock on the thing that holds this to the wall, because then your kids cannot pull this off the wall. They cannot mistakenly push the things that release because it is locked on the wall. And so we in 2000, whatever that was, put the thing on the wall, padlocked it, and put that key in a safe place. And in August of 2014, when we were getting ready to move, we remembered several years later that we had padlocked that thing to the wall and put that key in a safe place. And my wife sold the TV because we weren't going to have a spot for it here. And we were getting ready to get that TV down to give to the people that we sold it to. And sure enough, that key was very safe because we had no idea where the key was. And thus commenced the great key search of 2014. We looked everywhere in our house for this key, all over the place. Could not find it anywhere. Kept looking. We started thinking about, you know, we have to cut into drywall here to get this thing out somehow. What are we going to have to do? And finally, after, I mean, literally hours this day of searching for this key, we found it. We found it, and there was much rejoicing in it. And by the way, I went through several keys first, trying and not having the right key. Finally found the key, unlocked it, took the TV down off the wall, got the TV out of there, and everything was good. And I say all that to say this. We've all lost something. And you know how frustrating it is when you can remember kind of where it was, but you just can't seem to find it. And those are the tales, the parables that come here in Luke chapter 15. Beginning in verse 1, before we get to the lost things. "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him. But the Pharisees and teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" And I think right off the top, we see something different about Jesus versus the other religious leaders, which is Jesus wants to be around the people who actually need to hear what it is he's saying. Jesus wants to be around regular, ordinary people like you and I. Jesus is not looking for a gathering of people that have got it all together. Jesus is not looking for a gathering of people who are perfect in every way. Jesus is looking for a group of flawed people to spend his time with. And I don't know about you, but that is immediately cause for rejoicing in my mind, because I don't get everything right. I don't do things right all the time. I don't always have the right answer, and sometimes I fall short. Then Jesus told them this parable. And notice, they haven't really asked a question so much. They've just kind of made this statement. And then Jesus launches into this first parable. "Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it?" Now, I don't know, honestly, the answer to this question. I thought I should stop as I drive up the highway towards Corvallis. I like to take the back road because I hate I-5. And as I drive along the back road up towards Corvallis, I pass all these sheep pastures on either side. And I thought I should stop at one of these houses and knock on the door sometime and say, "I have a religious question for you." And they'll immediately be frightened by it, but it's actually a sheep question. And if you lost one, would you spend a lot of time looking for the one? Because I don't really know the answer to that question. I don't know the value of each of these sheep. I don't know what is worth looking for and what is not. But the impression we get here for Jesus is, if you have 99 and one is gone, you're searching for the one. You have got to find that one. Now, I don't know what this translates to for us in the lost things, because as far as I know, there are not shepherds among us. But if you lose one of something, chances are you're going to go and try to find it, especially if it has some sort of value. Or especially maybe if it's just the thing that completes the set. I've told you before, I've got a bunch of baseball cards in my office. When I was a kid, we didn't understand that some of these are worth more than others because the players are better or they're rookies or all these things. And we would trade cards based on the fact that I need that one to complete my set. And you would go and you would search for the one that you needed. And then when you completed that set, it was exciting. There's something to rejoice about it. And he said when he finds it, he joyfully, in verse 5, puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me. I found my lost sheep. I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent." Generally speaking, we get together here on Sunday mornings and we're the 99. Because we're here. We're kind of on this track of trying to move towards God, but I think most of us know someone who is the one and probably aren't doing nearly enough to set up that party in heaven that he's talking about to go out and find that one and bring them in. Now, we would love it, I think, if they came and they were back here with us, I hope. Maybe as we get further in the chapter, we could see other ways we might react. Or suppose, verse 8, a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, search carefully until she finds it, and when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me. I have found my lost coin. In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." Over the past couple days, we have been in Seattle. For a few days. David, my older son, has an interest in marine biology, specifically narwhals, which if you don't know what narwhals are, they're a real thing. They're the unicorn of the sea. They are these strange creatures that live up in the polar ice caps underwater, and they have horns that don't really serve a whole lot of purpose other than just look, it's one of those crazy things of God's creation. There is someone at the University of Washington who studies narwhals. This is what she does. And so we have tried, Stacy has tried for a few weeks to communicate with the University of Washington and see if we could get some FaceTime with the narwhal lady up at the U of W. And come to find out this week that we had where we could do it, she was not able, but there was someone else there who could talk to David about marine biology. And so we thought, let's go up to Seattle for a couple days. It'll be fun. And then because it's me and I'm crazy this way, I thought, I don't want to drive to Seattle. Let's take the train to Seattle. That'll be fun. So we got Nathan out of school Wednesday afternoon, whatever day that was, and we went down to the train station, and our whole family got there, and we got ready to check our bag and all of that stuff, and I reached for my wallet, and it was not there. And I knew I did not have time to get back to the house and then go back to the train station. I debated for a moment about I could go back to the apartment, try to catch the train in Albany where the next stop is. And then I decided, what could it be like to be gone for 3 days with no ID, no credit cards, no nothing, and just a wife to carry me along? And so I did. And I felt very lost, and I kept reaching for that wallet that was not there. We went along on the train, and we played cards with each other. We had family time. It was a lot of fun. I was very glad we did that instead of driving, even though I was there without my wallet. And we kept, every time we would get off of a train, we would look around for things that were lost. And one time, the people across the aisle from us said, one of your decks of cards is under the chair there. And we would reach down and grab it and get excited that we hadn't lost something else after the wallet thing. When we lose something and we find it, there is rejoicing. But all of that is just stuff. If we had never found the key for the TV, something would have happened. A locksmith would have been called. The Dremel tool would have gotten out and cut through the lock. Something would have happened. And life would have gone on. It's all just stuff. But all of this stuff in chapter 15 leads us to the big story, the one that we probably are a little more familiar with. Jesus continued, verse 11. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." Think about that for a minute. Who are the younger siblings among us? Okay, I see a few hands kind of. I'm the only child, so I guess I'm both. Could you imagine as the older, who are the older siblings among us? Okay, could you imagine as the older sibling being there in the house when the younger sibling comes in and says, "I know there, if you play your cards right, Dad, there will be at some point an inheritance for me. I want it now." Imagine what that conversation would be like. You imagine as the older sibling, the frustration you would have watching this. The, who does he think he is? Or is the parent of these kids watching this, thinking to yourself, seriously, who do you think you are? And I can imagine as the younger sibling trying to put your case together, you know, wouldn't you enjoy this much more if you got to see me enjoy this inheritance while you're still here? I don't want to think ahead to when you're going to be dead. That makes me sad. I don't want to think of it that way. So what if you just gave it to me now? And how ludicrous this plan sounds. And yet very quickly, as this verse ends, so he divided his property between them. And I don't know what would make a dad do something like this. You might look at it and think, that's a kind of an unwise move, because clearly, as you're young, the way you think of spending is a little different than maybe it is today, if you're a little older. We were talking about saving and money and things like that from Proverbs in the youth group class this morning. Did you know, my wife, the accountant, showed the kids this morning. Did you know that if at age 19, you started putting $2,000 into something that gained 12% interest, which I know is few and far between nowadays, but it's still possible. And from age 19 to age 26, once a year, you plug $2,000 into that account. At age 26, you never touch it again until age 65. You would have over $2 million in that account. Those who are 65 and above, think of what $2 million might do for you today. If just for that 7 years early in life. Now, some of you are not 19 yet. You now have the secret. This guy wants it now. And I will tell you, when you want it now, you are very likely not going to spend it well. Because there are 1,000 different ways you can spend that money now in youth that look pretty attractive to you. So he gets the money. Excuse me. In verse 13, it says, not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, because it's always better somewhere else. If you grew up here in Eugene, there's probably somewhere you wish you could go and just get out of here. If you grew up somewhere else, maybe Eugene is that place for you that you just wanted to get somewhere else. He went away to a distant country and there squandered his wealth in wild living. And we can label this wild living in any way you want to label it, but it is what most young folks would do if they were given a whole lot of money. Now, if you are young in the audience this morning, one, glad you're here. Two, if you're thinking to yourself, not me, think again. Because even the most balanced among us, if you were just handed a load of money, there are not a lot of folks with the discipline to make that work well. And even as we get older, honestly, there are probably not just tons of us with the discipline to make that work well. He squandered it all in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. And I would imagine as a young man, he probably never imagined a scenario where he would be in need. We pass people every day on the end of exit ramps, out in front of stores, with signs asking for things. Excuse me. I have no doubt that some choose that. I also have no doubt that there are some who never imagined a scenario that would place them there. And now that is the reality. Kind of like this guy. I don't know if they squandered it all somehow. I don't know if they ever had anything. But whatever has led them to where they are, this guy finds himself in a similar place. And so he squanders it all, this famine comes along. He had spent everything. And so in verse 15, he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. And remember, in the eyes of God at this point in time, pigs are a very unclean thing. So even to be around these pigs is something that is very, very not okay for someone in his position. He longed, in verse 16, to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. Now, I don't know if you have been around pigs. I've not been around them much, but I've seen them here and there in kind of their natural place, and I've never looked at the things they were eating and thought, got to have some of that. He's got to be pretty far gone at this point to look at that and think, that if I could just have that, everything would be better. And then, in verse 17, he came to his senses. A lot of people have to get to this point to get to that point. Have to hit absolute rock bottom to look around and realize life does not have to be like this. Now, the really troublesome and scary part of it is for a lot of people when they hit rock bottom and they realize life doesn't have to be like this, they have no idea what to do at that point. And they don't feel like they have any resources to get out of where they're at, and so they just continue on. For us, I think we know what it is we need at that point. And for this young man, he clearly knows. He came to his senses, and he says, "How many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.' So he got up and went to his father." And I have always imagined in this story, as he is walking along, for however long it takes to get from this distant country back to his home, he is probably rehearsing this speech in his head. Ever had that thing you want to ask somebody for that you think is just a little bit too much? And so you're rehearsing in your head over and over again how you're going to say it. How am I going to ask my boss for that raise? How am I going to ask that family member for that loan? How am I going to ask that person for forgiveness? Whatever it might be, how am I going to ask that person out? How am I going to ask that person for their hand in marriage? Whatever it is, and you rehearse it over and over and over again in your mind. And as he goes along, probably rehearsing that in his mind, it says his father, he was still a long way off. His father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. I think a lot of us, as we turn the page there, I love how in my Bible at least, there's right in the middle of that sentence, there's a page turn with this moment of mystery of his father saw him and sat back in his rocking chair on the porch, tapping his foot, arms folded, waiting for the "I told you so." His father saw him and shook his head, knew it was going to turn out this way. His father saw him and ran to him. And here on Memorial Day weekend in our country, I think of those videos we see online or on the news. My wife and I, anytime we see those things online, where the soldier is there to surprise the child, the husband, the wife, the mother, the father, you want to make me or my wife cry and look like silly, crazy people? Put about three of those videos in front of us. And the emotion in those videos. There is one that was at a South Carolina football game a few years ago. They thought their family was being honored because their husband was and dad was overseas. And they wanted to honor a military family that day. And there they are, and they're shown on the big screen. And the commentator is saying the things that he's saying over the loudspeakers. And one person in the family turns their head and sees down at the other end of the stadium the soldier that's supposed to be sneaking up on them. And it doesn't matter what the commentator is saying anymore or what the ceremony is doing. In a sprint, takes off for that corner. Just thinking about it, it's getting me a little bit. That's what I picture here. This is not a God, this is not a father that is waiting for you to make that long trek of shame back. This is a God who sees in the distance, a Father who sees in the distance and runs. And by the way, and if I'm wrong on this, someone can let me know later, I'm pretty confident the only time in Scripture we see God run. God runs for the son who has been lost. For the son, by the way, is lost completely of his own accord. Did it to himself. The kind of thing that as you look at the beginning of this story, you know it's not going to go well even if you've never heard it before. Because this guy who just gets all this money to spend, he's not going to, you know, put part of it in a saving can and put part of it in a spending can and give some of it back. He's going to go out there and squander this money. You know it's going to happen that way. And you're waiting for the I told you so's, and the father instead runs. Filled with compassion for him, he ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. And then the son is ready for the speech that he's been rehearsing. Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. And the father interrupts. He doesn't care about the speech. He doesn't want to hear the bad the son has done. He instead says to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. They began to celebrate. I love that imagery, and I like to think that if anyone who is prodigal, anyone who is lost, came back in here, this is our reaction. And yet, I think we all know the reality that it's not always the way we react. I think I've mentioned before in here, we have a picture board out here. It's not, I guess it's not a board. It's a picture wire with clippy things out in the foyer of the members here. So we can all, when that person says hi to us and we said, oh, I forgot they go to church here. Who are they? We can run back there and look at it real quick, see who they are. Or if you're new, it gives you an advantage to be able to look and see who's here. We had a missionary in Ghana at the church that I attended in Arkansas, and he showed a picture of a board just like that on his slideshow, and at the top of it, it said backsliders. It was everyone who had gone to church there who hadn't been in a while, and their pictures were right there, and I thought, man, that works in Ghana. Could you imagine if we had another one at the other end of the foyer that was the backsliders, and if you came to visit one Sunday and you had been moved from that one to that one? Now, part of that is because in Ghana, their culture of Christianity is, if you have claimed to be one who follows Christ and you have let go of that, we're going to hold you accountable. And I don't think it's just by putting you on the board. I'll bet they're at their houses and their huts, and they are saying, we haven't seen you in a while. And not just because we're trying to be accusatory, but because we love you and we want you to be here and be part of us. I wonder how many of us instead would be the shaking the head, I told you so. Oh, haven't seen them since that split. Haven't seen them since that big drama went down. Haven't seen them since whatever. Hadn't seen them since their life fell apart. Haven't seen them since the divorce. Haven't seen them since their kids went crazy. Haven't seen them since whatever. And for a lot of folks who are not here anymore, who once were, we're a reminder of that moment, whether we want to be or not. But yet we desperately want them back here. And the reason I said at the beginning of the chapter that we're going to look at four lost things, not three, because we've had the sheep and the coin and now the son, I think the other son has lost his way too. Meanwhile, verse 25, the older son was in the field. When he came in near the house, he heard music and dancing, so he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. Your brother has come, he replied. Your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. And the older brother is so excited that his younger brother is back home, and he wants to just join in the party, and he's going to leave for a few minutes to go get a gift because he didn't have anything ready. No. The older brother, became angry and refused to go in. Why? Because he's been doing the right thing all along. He didn't have the audacity to go in and ask for his inheritance ahead of time. He has been working the whole time this guy has been off doing who knows what. He's the loyal one. Where is my party? Where is the party for me? I've been here the whole time. And this is his attitude. And there is a reason there is an older brother with this attitude in the story, because there are older brothers with this attitude. I think this links right back to the Pharisee's first statement. He's eating with tax collectors and sinners. We are the religious people who know everything and do things the right way and know the law, and we have been here all along, and here comes this guy saying that he is the Messiah and he's eating with tax collectors and sinners. That doesn't make any sense. The older brother is angry. And if you're the parent, I don't know how you react at this point. I think there are times where maybe some of us want to say, let him be angry. He'll get through it. The older brother became angry, refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. The father is not content to let the lost son who went away and came back not be celebrated. The father is also not content to just let this older brother go either, because they're both lost in different ways, and the father wants both of them back. He pleaded with him, but he answered the father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. You never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when that son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him. 50 years I have served this church. I taught that Bible class. I filled the communion cups. I did whatever I did. And these people just come back in. 50 years I've served this church, and these people just moved to town, and now they want to be the song leader. They want to do this or that. We would never say things like that, would we? Not people in this church, but other churches, I've heard things like that. It's so easy to get so possessive of everything. His inheritance is already gone. He took it. We're not going to disown family. We are not going to disown family. And that comes from the top, the father. That is how he operates. And every one of us is thankful for that in our own lives, and we have got to become a whole lot more thankful of that in the lives of others. And because everyone does not end up there in the same fashion, some of us get there immediately, some of us get there at age 85. Some of us get there after living a very godly, clean, pure life the whole time. Some of us have lived adventurous, crazy lives and still end up there, and God is just as thankful that either of those lost people get to him and wants us to be a part of that mission. When this son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him. My son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And this morning, each of us is one of those things in the eyes of God. We are either lost or we are found. And if you feel lost this morning, God is running for you too. And he desperately wants to have a relationship with you. And if you are found this morning, we rejoice with that, and God rejoices in that. And God would remind each of us who feels found that we should go out and seek the lost too. And this morning, if someone prodigal comes to your mind, do not let go of that thought when we leave here. Pray for that person. Communicate with that person. Let that person know they are loved. And let that person know that they might find an older brother or two here, but hopefully they're going to find a whole lot of people that get it and understand that we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, but because of his mercy, we can have life with him. This morning, if you'd like to be baptized into his family, if there's something we can pray about in your life, if you have any needs at all, please come as we stand and sing.